I'm Dan Rundy. I run the Project on Prosperity and Development here at CSIS. It's a real pleasure to have Lee Zack here, the director of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency here at CSIS, with us. I think TDA is one of the hidden jewels of the development community and the trade community. I think it's many people are familiar with it, have heard of it, have also been engaged with it, but I think it's been great getting to know Lee better in the process of host of getting ready for this event. We had a great lunch with some of the senior scholars here at CSIS, as well as some senior outside folks talking about the intersection of trade and development, as well as the opportunities for TDA. I think this is a unique moment on a couple of levels for TDA, and there's a unique opportunity for TDA to make a great contribution to development, to our exports and jobs, and to our national security. Even with a relatively small budget, it leverages and catalyzes multiples of its investments, bringing in private investment to developing countries. And you'll hear about that from Director Zack. We're in a situation where we have, I think, a new period of foreign assistance austerity, where I think we're going to be looking at 20 to 25% budget cuts. At the same time, we're looking at a situation where we have great needs in places like the Middle East with the Arab Spring, where a big part of what we need to be delivering is bringing in private investment. And then we also have many complex countries as well, post-conflict countries outside of the Middle East or around the Middle East. And then finally, we have a situation where AID and others where we're graduating or rethinking our relationship with middle-income countries. And I think that TDA has an important role to play in all of these contexts. And so I think without further ado, I'm going to turn the floor over to Director Zack.
Thanks very much, Dan, and thank you very much for lunch. I really had a very enjoyable time. What a great group of people. And I had an opportunity to walk around a little bit and introduce myself to people here, and this is also a very interesting group that seems to have a lot of different backgrounds. So let me start with one question, and I'm going to try to be very informal. But how many of you have worked with USTDA before? Okay, so we have a good number, but we also have some people who are new to USTDA, so I'm going to give a little bit of a background of USTDA, a little bit of the nuts and bolts. And I think some of you who've worked with us in the past may also find that there are some new programs that we've developed, so that might be of interest to you. So I'm just going to step back for a second and outline a little bit about USTDA. We're an independent U.S. government agency, and we encourage U.S. business involvement in priority development projects in emerging economies. We, as you can hear, we have a dual mission. It focuses on economic development on one side, but it focuses on getting U.S. business involved in that economic development. And I think that's a very important part of our mission, and something that we were talking about during lunch today, that we really see as sort of the wave of the future with respect to economic development, having the private sector as a partner in that economic development. How do we do that? We have two means for doing that, two major programs. One of them is our International Business Partnership Program. And also for those who are taking notes, what we have in the back of the room is our annual report for last year. But we set it up in such a way that it basically outlines our tools. So some of the background information I'm giving you is in that annual report. And the International Business Partnership Program, we both develop and fund conferences, training sessions, workshops, and reverse trade missions that focus on bringing buyers from developing and middle-income country to the United States to meet with U.S. providers of goods and services. So the goal is to get the right people together to make that match. The second program that we have is the one that some of you may be familiar with, which is our Project Development Program. And that's our more traditional program that's focused on feasibility studies, pilot projects, and technical assistance. And there we provide the funding for those activities. That is a little more sort of long-term. You need to put the investment in now, but it's long-term. But our International Business Partnership Program is more of our short-term program, focusing on bringing people together. And frankly, we see that as a very important part of our portfolio right now. there's a real need both with respect to economic development, but also with respect to creating jobs in the United States. And right now, 50% of the market with respect to goods and services is in developing countries. So this is really the market where U.S. business should be looking to go, but it's a way that it can really be a win-win, and a win-win with respect to economic development. And that's why I say it's actually the wave of the future. Where do we work? One of the things, of course, as we were talking about, it's clearly been an environment where people have had to really focus. And so USTDA has focused its efforts with respect to countries as well as with respect to sectors. And we focus in the area of developing the infrastructure, so focusing on transportation, energy, ICT, and the environment. And in a very targeted market, also in healthcare and in a targeted market. And we were talking before about how do you get the private sector involved and where do you get the private sector involved and what is USTDA's niche? And clearly one of the places that it can really serve a very important role is in the middle income countries. And as a result, USTDA has focused significantly in the middle income countries to be able to bring those together. So that's our general, and I want to leave time for questions. We had a good discussion previously. But basically, with respect to USTDA, dual mission, it's unique in that dual mission. And also the important part about that dual mission is it also brings money back into the U.S. economy. So for every dollar that we're programming, we basically have associated $47 of U.S. exports for that. So it's bringing something back. It's a win-win. And we do it by virtue of long-term activities, feasibility studies, technical assistance, and short-term activities known for our reverse trade missions.
Great. Well, this is great. I think I've got a couple questions for you that I think will help get the conversation started. But I'm hoping you could just talk a little bit about you have a new program coming up in Egypt. If you could just talk about what was the genesis of that and how is TDA participating in the Arab Spring more broadly?
Thank you very much. And yes, this is a very important program that we're very excited about. USTDA has had a long-term partnership with Egypt, but clearly what's happening today is extremely important. And it's important for Egypt, but it's important around the world right now. And in meetings with stakeholders in Egypt, one of the things that became very clear is that it's important for the U.S. business to understand that Egypt is open for business. And as a result, USTDA is known for its flexibility and its ability to do things quickly. And what it did is it recognized that need, and it decided to get together and coordinate with other parts of the U.S. government and to put forward something which is referred to as Egypt Forward. And it's the Egypt Forward Initiative, and it's going to begin with a two-day forum that's going to take place on June 27 and 28 here in Washington, D.C. And it's going to focus on specific areas, sectors such as transportation, ICT, the environment, and agriculture. But one of the things we realized, and as a matter of fact, some of you may have seen, here's a flyer for Egypt Forward that we have. And one of the things we also wanted to demonstrate is the fact that it's not just about D.C. And success with respect to Egypt, it's going to be essential to engage the private sector in Egypt. And so after the Egypt Forum presentation, the delegates are going to go across the country to Houston, to New York, to California, to basically get the word out that Egypt is open for business. And the goal is, as President Obama had indicated, is moving from aid to moving to trade and investment, and the importance of the U.S. private sector as part of that.
Could you just talk a little bit about how this came about? Obviously, you had folks must have come to you about Egypt, and there were some. I thought that was a really interesting anecdote about how this came about.
I mean, literally, this came about because we had people from the private sector in Egypt that came to USTDA and indicated that they wanted to tell us about what had happened in Egypt, but also indicated the importance of stimulating the economy, especially during this period. And it literally came out of a meeting with them. them in our conference room, my team standing up after that and saying, we need to do something. And immediately they focused on this idea of trying to coordinate with the other agencies and literally ended up getting into a taxi cab and going to the Department of State to sit down to talk to people about this, who really thought it was great and who are partners in this, getting in a taxi cab, going over to the Department of Commerce, talking to those people. I mean, it's a demonstration of the fact that USTDA is a very effective convener. And so we were able to call, frankly, our friends. And everyone said, great idea. We're with you. We recognize, what can we do to help? And so we are partnering with the Department of State and the Department of Commerce to make this happen, as well as the U.S. Chamber and as well as the AmCham. So literally, we put out the call and people came.
Can you talk a little bit about some of your activities in Tunisia as well? Obviously, this is a country of great interest at the moment, and we don't really have a foreign assistance program there. We have a MEPI program. The U.S. government has a MEPI program there, but there's not. But obviously, it's a country that would be in your sweet spot as a country where TDA would operate.
And clearly, Tunisia is a country that we'd love to do more in. And I'll be honest, it's a country we haven't done as much in as we might have as in Egypt and would like to. One of the things we're looking forward to is, again, focusing on some of the reverse trade missions, bringing people here to the United States. And actually, we had visitors from Tunisia as well who basically also said that they thought it would be a good idea to focus on the private sector in Tunisia and be able to help them make some of those business matches. And so that's something that we're going to be looking forward to in the future, is working together.
Just want to move the conversation to the topic of conflict zones. You're obviously in Afghanistan and Liberia, Haiti. Can you talk about what are the sorts of needs that you find in zones of conflict? What are some of the myths, if you will, about that? And obviously, there's always seems to be another conflict or disaster that pops up, and how does TDA react, and what's its contribution?
It's interesting. It's different, I think, in every country, and depending what the situation is. Clearly, with respect to some of the conflict zones, USTDA has been very effective at being able to come in and help in its programs. In particular, I think when we were talking about Afghanistan, that's an example where early on we were able to go in and provide the technical assistance that could help bring the private sector in. And an example of that was focusing on ICT. Clearly, that's an area where there is able to be there isn't a hard infrastructure, or there wasn't an infrastructure in place. We were able to come in, provide the technical assistance for licensing for ICT, which then allowed private sector companies to be able to come in. So that's one example of where USTDA can come in. Sometimes we have to wait a little bit until there's a real foundation. Sometimes USAID is the appropriate agency to go in first to build some of the very basic infrastructure, and then we can help with the capacity building to be able to create an environment for the private sector to be able to come in afterwards. But Haiti is a very good example where, from the very beginning, USTDA was involved. That right before, because we had been involved with Haiti in the past, right after the earthquake, as a matter of fact, when the first responder teams went to Haiti, they went with two feasibility studies that USTDA had completed, one that was focused on energy that we had just finished and another one that happened to be focused on aviation. So literally, they went with our feasibility studies to say, okay, here's the map of where all the energy is, et cetera. Since that time, we've actually been working with our partners. Some of them are here in the private sector to update that energy plan. And as a result, people will have specific ideas of what is needed as a result of that. So that's a place where we could get in really quickly. We did that with respect to the tsunami. And part of that is USTDA's independence and flexibility allows it to move really quickly. So we were boots on the ground extremely quickly.
One of the areas of interest to me, and I've written about this, about middle-income countries, AID's announced that they're closing 11 missions. You've obviously are focused on lower to upper middle-income countries. A lot of where aid's going to close their missions are middle-income countries. Can you talk about how you've worked with AID in the past in terms of thinking about graduation and how you think about – obviously, you're in any number of these middle-income countries. If you just talk about that more broadly.
No, and I think the middle-income countries actually provide a very good example of where USDA can help be the catalyst for the private sector. And I think a very good example of this was Turkey. Turkey was a USAID country. It graduated its program. But clearly, there was a lot there and a good foundation to be able to move forward. In Turkey, USTDA provided a feasibility study for a geothermal power plant. And that power plant then went forward and was built. It's the largest geothermal facility in Turkey, providing very needed power, which is very important for economic development. And it also, there were a couple other factors with that. What that did was, again, a win-win situation. That geothermal power plant not only provides power that can power industry in Turkey, but in of itself, it employs 250 people. At the same time, U.S. goods and services were used as part of the development of that power plant and actually was funded by Exim Bank. And so there were jobs here in the United States. So that was a good example where we actually provided the feasibility study, but it then went on to be leveraged and to be the bridge to sort of a commercial project. Also, subsequently, with respect to Turkey, we've gone on to develop an MOA focused on clean energy and are working with them on a variety of other ways to be able to provide power. So that's a good example of sort of the transition that was a USAID, but now we're making the bridge to a much more commercial way of providing the infrastructure.
Could you just talk about the example of Romania? Because I do think as well, because this was another one that where this was this happened, and I just think that if there are 11 aid missions that we're going to be getting out, that some subset or all of them are going to, I think, mimic to some extent what you've been doing in Romania with aid. And so.
Yeah, I think Romania is another example which had been a USAID country and was graduating. And one of the things that was clear is to be able for Romania to be able to move forward, they had to develop their infrastructure, in particular in ICT. And so USTDA has been involved in working with them with a variety of projects with respect to ICT and encouraging the private sector to be able to participate. And as a matter of fact, one of our contractors who had started as a small business and working with us has continued to do work in Romania and actually has opened their own office in Romania, as a matter of fact. So it not only has been sort of a win-win, but basically they were able to expand to business there as well.
It's obvious that it seems to me between both conflict zones, middle-income countries, the Arab Spring, you're getting an increasing amount of demand for your services. Where are you having to say no when you'd like to say yes?
In too many places.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, and I think that's really the case. The demand for USTDA is extremely strong, and unfortunately, we're not able to meet that demand. So as a result, our program staff is constantly reviewing projects in all of our priority sectors, and that's one of the things we have done. We have focused on those priority sectors and on our priority countries. So there may be some countries that may have a good idea, but we may not be able to do business there, so we had to focus in that way. But frankly, even at this point, focused on priority sectors and on priority countries, we can't meet the demand that's there.
Well, I think this is pretty comprehensive. I think I'm going to open it up to questions and comments. The gentleman in the yellow shirt. If you could, and I would ask folks to identify themselves. Oh. I'm Sean here, and just if you'd identify your name and a question, and because you're having to squat down, it'll require you to keep the question brief. Yeah. We're going to model brief questions. That's good.
Stephen Rocker from Interaction. Does the USTDA do any collaboration with the Millennium Challenge Corporation? Just from your description of the USTDA, it seems like there may be a lot of synergies between the two agencies.
So MCC.
Great question. As a matter of fact, we do. We've actually collaborated with them in a couple different ways. One of the ways is, as you know, they provide funding for compacts, and oftentimes the goods and services are provided on a competitive bid. One of the things we've done is tried to ensure that U.S. businesses are competitive with respect to winning those contracts. So we've actually brought the decision makers back to the United States through these reverse trade missions to meet with U.S. businesses and providers of goods and services so that they have an idea of what it is that U.S. can provide. So in that case, the MCC is providing the funding. There's going to be a competitive bid, but we want to be sure that they know that what the goods and services are from the U.S. so that we bring people here. The other thing we've done is we've done work to complement some of the work that the MCC has done. For example, in Ghana, they've built roadways, and we've actually done some work focusing on ports. So, and alongside, we've also in El Salvador, with respect to a project where, again, there was a roadway, we helped to build a, or provide funding for a master plan to be able to develop businesses around that roadway. So we actually do collaborate with the MCC and being able to try to bring the private sector, and to be sure also that there's a level playing field and that U.S. has an opportunity to win some of those MCC contracts.
Okay. The woman next to you here, just speaking to the microphone, that it requires you to keep it brief. That's it, right?
Noreen Hott, Project on Middle East Democracy. I was wondering, does USTDA have any political benchmarks or economic indicators that the countries have to meet before you will work with them, like the MCC does?
We don't have the same benchmarks that the MCC does. I mean, clearly we look to make sure that they're going to be a good partner. And so we look to see, we do our due diligence with respect to the people that we're working with and the country we're working with. The other thing is we also work with the private sector. So sometimes that's really important within a country as well, not just working with the government, but working with the private sector. And so we don't have the same indicators, but clearly we generally look at, you know, advice from the State Department and others, but there are some times that it may make sense for us to be working in a country with the private sector.
Just if you could just talk a little bit about what you're getting at this issue of criteria. There's, I looked some of the 65 or 66 countries where you're operating. How do you determine what are the countries? Is it, I don't mean to make this a trick question, but okay, would you be operating in? Is it countries? If you're a DAC member, no. How do you cut off on the upper end, and how do you cut off either on the lower end, or is it some geostrategic or geopolitical issue that on the lower end?
With respect to what constitutes a developing or middle-income country, we look at the World Bank standard, so we follow their standard, and we'll go up to higher middle income. With respect to recently having to focus with respect to countries, we look to see where there's a real demand, in particular a demand from U.S. business. And our staff is really expert with respect to what is the country doing, what are the needs going to be, working closely with host countries to do that analysis. So the analysis is where have we had success in the past, but also where is the country going in the future? And so where do we think we should be to have the maximum win-win?
Yes, please, if you could come up to the microphone. Sorry.
My name is Anne Renouf, and I'm asking about intellectual property, both with regard to MCC, which has tended to increase the value of some of its projects because of it. PIPA, Public Interest Intellectual Property Advisors, and WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization based in Geneva, have undersold but are trying to catch up to software and other literally intangible properties. Offshore countries and their new businesses not as much as they want to, are underserved in terms of the galvanizing of intellectual property expertise in the United States to bring to deals where intellectual property adds serious value. And in some of the smaller companies in the United States, there are few, if any, advisors in intellectual property. And I assume that Lee, that whenever you can, you'll bring expertise in intellectual property to the table, whatever the subject, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's new software, energy, whatever it is. There's a huge amount of innovation there that tends to be undervalued or is essentially robbed by smaller companies in the United States that are expert, but they use those expertise to garner their own business rather than, if you will, serving as partners with the smaller and medium-sized companies abroad.
Okay, so questions on intellectual property.
I'll say it's actually very interesting. I will say we don't do, you know, that much with respect to intellectual property, but I think one of the things we do is recognize that that's a very important part of business. And when we're working with large businesses and small businesses, the indication that that is something that they have to pay attention to. I think the other thing we actually have done on a very limited basis, again, because we do have to focus, is we have done some very limited training with respect to abroad, the importance of intellectual property. And what we think that leads to is, one, a greater respect for the U.S.'s intellectual property, because they understand what the benefit is to them in the host country of intellectual property. So in very limited cases, we actually have done some training on intellectual property, and again, see it very much as a win-win. If they understand the value in the host country, then they'll also understand the value of protecting it from another country as well.
Hey, the woman over there.
Hello, Director. I'm Chris Crafton with Booz Allen.
Hi.
I was fascinated with your comments on infrastructure and was wondering if you envision perhaps the financial system of a country, the financial infrastructure, as becoming part of the total infrastructure that you might be looking at and interested in, you know, the banking, the intermediaries, that sort of thing.
One word. Absolutely. Clearly, the financial infrastructure is extremely important. And as a matter of fact, in Nigeria is an example where we recognize the importance of the fact that there is money in country. And part of it is, part of that money can be used to help fund some of these projects. And we actually did fund some technical assistance with respect to working with Nigerian banks with respect to how they could better use their system to provide loans to some of the development projects within their own country. And we've also put a lot of effort recently with respect to the reverse trade missions with respect to the importance of ICT for banking and secure banking. And clearly in developing countries, they are leapfrogging over us with respect to secure banking and individual banking through ICT. So we're focusing on that area. But yes, the financial system is an important part of the infrastructure.
Yeah, Meredith.
Meredith Broadbent, CSIS. Of your priority sectors, are some of them more beneficial in terms of U.S. exports? Do they tend to draw U.S. exports and transportation versus ICT? Is there any qualitative difference there you've observed?
Yeah, I think clearly there are some that may be a little better than others, and it all may depend upon the country. I mean, clearly there are some very big ticket items in transportation. So there are going to be some very large exports. But at the same time, with respect to clean energy, that's an area where, again, there's the possibility for larger exports, but it's also a market that is increasing over time. ICT, probably on the whole, has sort of smaller, but it's more replicable. So I think they're all a little bit different of how you get there, and they may vary a little bit. But there are some, like transportation, that they're just big, but others that are incredibly valuable, and it's getting it out of the replication.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Farah Aman with World Wildlife Fund, and I just was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what role various free trade agreements have in not only how it kind of shapes your priority places, if it does at all, in the development of free trade agreements, and if you have a role in that.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a great question. Actually, USTDA has worked very closely with USTR with respect to the free trade agreements. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to be going to the AGOA forum in a couple weeks. And one of the things that really had become clear with respect to AGOA and the implementation effectiveness of AGOA is that one of the very important parts is to be able to have the infrastructure for trade. And as a result, USTDA often works alongside USTR to try to help develop the infrastructure for trade. Or with respect to, for example, Colombia, we actually funded a feasibility study with respect to the port of Cartagena. and is the first CSI certified port in Latin America. So looking to see what's going to be needed to be able to implement the free trade agreements, clearly as bricks and mortar, but also sometimes, and we've did this with respect to CAFTA, what's the regulatory environment that's going to be needed to be able to implement that free trade agreement? So we work very closely with USTR and in the countries where there are free trade agreements.
Gentleman over here.
I'm Nelson Cunningham with McLarty Associates, and I had the pleasure of heading the Obama transition team for TDA when I first met Deputy Director Zach before the President selected her to become Director Zach. And one of the things that struck us as we did the initial review of TDA for the President-elect was how tiny your budget was and yet how much business you were able to drive with that small budget, contracts to U.S. companies. How are you faring? How's the agency faring in the current budget battles today? And are you able to persuade people of the dollar-for-dollar value that you bring?
And for that dollar-for-dollar value, again, it's 1 to 47. Mm-hmm. And that's a great question. We were talking earlier today about the fact, I think, if you look at USTDA, it is the model for the future. I mean, clearly getting the private sector involved with respect to economic development is the way to be going, and also to be able to leveraging financing. And the big question is, how do you get this message heard, especially as a smaller agency? We've been really happy with the fact that the U.S. business community has really come to our aid with respect to this and indicated the value. But at the same time, I will say in the 2011 budget, we did have a $5 million cut with respect to our budget. So that really is significant for us, and we were already oversubscribed, so as a result, it's significant for going forward. And I think clearly this is an environment where this is the type of assistance that can really be used to leverage the private sector and that we can have an even greater impact in the future.
Yes.
Thank you. Leon Skarshinsky, Nathan Associates. Quick question. We spoke about kind of collaborating with MCC. Have you ever played a formal role in some greater USAID project? So where they have a general infrastructure / trade / IPR project, and did TDA ever play a subcomponent role of that or a particular role? Thank you.
Thanks very much. Actually, it's a lot of working sort of alongside and taking USAID projects to the next step. So oftentimes it's a matter of USAID may bring something to our attention, and basically we'll then take it further. Or with respect to South Africa is a good example. I was just talking to our team before we came over, where USAID is doing some work with respect to the regulatory environment, with respect to energy, and we're actually doing the very specific project implementation review. So we're working alongside them. Oftentimes they'll say, we've been able to bring something this far, but we need you to take it to the next step.
You know, I have a question for you about just going back to the Arab world for a minute, and you've talked about Egypt and Tunisia. Could you talk about Pakistan as well as could you talk about perhaps Libya in terms of and Afghanistan? You touched on Afghanistan, but if you talk about Pakistan and Libya as two countries that have either, you know, have been countries of great interest to the United States from a geopolitical standpoint, if you could just touch on both of those, how you've interacted with both of those, and how you're thinking about in a situation like Libya where we may be having to get ready for some sort of a significant change, if and when you're going into a country like a Libya, it's sort of like an Afghanistan. What are the sorts of things you look at?
I think Pakistan and Afghanistan are a really good example. Clearly, that's an area where USTDA has been active. And as a matter of fact, working with the State Department, we signed a memorandum of understanding focusing on transit trade between Afghanistan and Pakistan and helping to develop the infrastructure for trade. So this was a way that we could take some very important policy initiatives, some very important economic initiatives, and to be able to provide USTDA assistance in bringing the private sector. We also have been working in Pakistan, focusing on areas such as clean energy and very effectively, and as well as coal chain. and being able to get preserve products and get products to market. And with respect to places like Afghanistan, as we were talking earlier, I mean, clearly they're also focusing on the basic infrastructure, but also focusing on the ICT infrastructure as well has been very important.
Could you talk about, we touched on it over lunch, about agriculture. There's the Feed the Future initiative. You obviously have a number of unique contributions that you make to the agriculture conversation. If you could talk about those, and then also how you're plugging into the discussion around Feed the Future, if you are.
And it was interesting, and I have to say it surprised me a little bit as we started to look at agriculture and looked at our mission and tried to figure out where we could play a role. But this issue with respect to there's one thing to be able to grow a product. It's another thing to be able to get that product either to the people for food or get the product to market. And that's where there's a significant loss with respect to the product. And so USTDA has been focusing on trying to minimize that loss in two ways. One, focusing on cold chain and the importance of cold chain to that process, but also focusing on the transportation itself. So we find ourselves actually trying to, once a product is produced, to try to help preserve that product and get it to market in a timely fashion. And recently we actually had a reverse trade mission from India that was focused on the cold chain and had talked about sort of the importance of that to the preservation of their product and the technology that we had here that was so important, and they were sort of ready to sort of, you know, buy it and bring it back with them on the way. The other thing is I was just in Iowa, as a matter of fact, last week, looking at agricultural equipment, and that's another area. Sort of using large-scale agricultural equipment can be so much more efficient. And last year, after the AGOA Forum, USTDA hosted a reverse trade mission, bringing some of the delegates to the Midwest to look at agricultural equipment and also to look at how that agricultural equipment is used. So we have also found that is a very effective way to work with Feed the Future.
Can you just speak to this is something Ashley Chandler, who's to your right, and I have been thinking about and working on, is how do you combine technical assistance and investment capital? And could you just speak to your relationship that you have with OPIC and Ex-Im Bank, specifically those two agencies?
They're definitely agencies that we work with almost every single day. That throughout our agency, I think at almost every level in the agency, there are relationships amongst our staff focusing on if we are looking at a project initially, is this the kind of project that could get implementation financing? That's one of our standards. And then is it possible that it would be an OPIC project, perhaps an Ex-Im Bank project? And when we structure our feasibility study or what it is that we're looking to do, we want to be sure we're asking the kinds of questions that that Ex-Im Bank or OPIC would want to ask. So it's sort of a one-stop shop. You know, they come to us, we ask the questions so that it's ready to move on to the next stage. And I think I mentioned the Turkey project I mentioned was a very large-scale project that went on to be financed by Ex-Im Bank. We have similar examples of projects that have gone on to be financed by OPIC as well. So it's a very close collaboration, including, frankly, the heads of agencies get together regularly as well. So it's a very close collaboration.
I think, Ashley, you wanted to...
Thank you, Ashley Chandler, CSIS. You talked a lot today about working closely across U.S. government, and then you just briefly spoke about the agriculture and connecting transportation, getting the goods out to market. I just got back from Haiti, so I can't help but think of the example of what the IDB and a whole consortium of people are trying to do with the Haitian mangoes. Could you perhaps speak about two parts? Are you active in any of this in Haiti, and what international organizations do you work with or could you see working with in the future?
With respect to Haiti, we've been focusing on the energy sector as well as the transportation sector. So we've been active there from the very beginning and coordinating with USAID and the State Department and also the IDB. But I think you raise a very good point. And one of the things that we've been doing is we've been working with the multilateral institutions and finding a way that we can leverage our funding, also the private sector opportunity with the multilateral development banks. So we have some terrific success stories working with the IFC, working with the IDB, working with the World Bank. So we clearly are looking to work with other organizations, in particular those that would be able to provide financing.
Yes, please.
Hi. I'm Francia Torres with Creative Associates International. And I'm just curious about the USTDA's strategy on Cuba, sort of long-term strategy, and if you think that if you have the right environment that you might have some programs there.
I was going to say right now, because our agency is the U.S. government agency, we have very specific legislation with respect to where we can work and where we cannot work. So right now, we're in an environment that we cannot work in Cuba. So we're constrained until we have the ability to work there.
Yes.
Jim Reagan, IBC. Is TDA working, or do you have any plans to work on rare earth elements with any of our friends and allies, either in production or recycling, efficiency, those sorts of things?
I think we clearly have looked at some of the opportunities, and I think this is something that would have to be U.S. business-driven with respect to where the opportunities are. And I think they're sort of, again, maybe focusing on sort of where the export opportunities are. But it's something clearly we could look at with respect to U.S. businesses, but we'd also look very carefully at sort of what the environment is and where they are in particular.
I'm just thinking that maybe what we could do is if we don't have any additional questions, we could wrap up now. And if you're available for a couple minutes, we might – I suspect there will be folks that are going to want to chat with you offline. So if I'll give a chance at one last round for a last set of questions. And if not, we'll – this last question. Okay. I think Libby just
– Yeah, one more question.
Yeah.
Libby Denniston, CSIS. I'd love to hear just about how you've spoken about how in Egypt you were approached by a number of businesses. I would just like to hear about how you establish these relationships initially, what kind of outreach you do, how you just build these relationships with businesses abroad.
There are a couple ways, and it was something that we mentioned before. I mean, clearly, one of the first things we do when we travel in country is we work with the AmChams in country. So we want to make sure that we meet with U.S. businesses that are doing work in country. The other thing, it goes back to the interagency cooperation, that USTDA is able to leverage our partners at the Commerce Department through the Commercial Service, as well as the State Department and the Econ Department. So they oftentimes are looking at opportunities in country, or they have people come to them with opportunities, and then they refer them to us as well. So we do our own travel, reach out to U.S. businesses, but also we get many referrals from the State Department and the Commerce Department.
Well, I think we should perhaps end it here, and I hope you'll join me in thanking Director Zak.
Thank you.